We begin with concerns about extreme heat at the Games. The Summer Olympics have been getting warmer, and heat physiologist Mike Tipton has warned that climate change is causing fundamental shifts in the safety of Olympic events, with the risk of some competitors collapsing and even dying.
The Tokyo Games was labelled the hottest in history, with an air temperature of about 34 degrees Celsius and a relative humidity of around about 70%. Both of which, of course, are very important in terms of your ability to regulate your temperature during exercise. And the estimation is that the Paris Olympics could surpass that, certainly in terms of temperature. That could mean we'd be looking at air temperatures in the 40s. And to just put that in context, the best air temperature for people who are engaged in continuous activity is around about 11 degrees Celsius. It's a challenge to the physiology of the body that can result in pathophysiological consequences.
Let's launch straight into them then. What health risks are we talking about when it comes to competing in extreme heat?
So the direct effects are simply the fact that you become hyperthermic. If you stop all the heat from leaving the body and ask somebody to exercise moderately, they'll reach a dangerous level of heat content in about 20 minutes. You tend to go through the sort of warning signs of heat disorders, which will include things like muscle cramps, heat cramps, which are obviously affecting performance.
While this program is about sport at the extremes, I'm glad you mentioned the kind of less severe, because this is a spectrum really, isn't it, when it comes to the effects of heat on our physiology. But all of them are detrimental to the sport, because right at that less severe end of the spectrum, fatigue, those cramps, we're still going to see a diminished spectacle for the people who've paid a lot of money to come and see the events.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's important to keep this discussion in the wider context. I mean, obviously, we don't want athletes to be injured or put in any way in hazard. But by the same token, of course, they also want to perform at the best of their ability. And when you start to talk about things like heat cramps and feeling faint and lightheadedness and bad decision making because of cognitive impairments, then that all has a direct effect on performance. And we tend to focus quite a lot on, firstly, endurance athletes, athletes producing lots of heat, understandably. But some of these changes, some lightheadedness, poor decision making, are going to affect all sports.
Exertional heat illnesses, heat stroke, for example, what's going on physiologically there for, in particular, people like endurance athletes in extreme heats?
It's compounded by dehydration, which is very easy, of course, to achieve in a hot environment when you've got somebody exercising and producing 1 to 2 liters of sweat per hour. And it's characterized by, therefore, blood pressure being lowered, lightheadedness, nausea, vomiting, headache, and you start to lose cardiovascular function. So you find blood pooling in dilated peripheral vessels. You have an impaired cardiac function, cardiac output, decreasing arterial pressure. It's not necessarily associated with a high deep body temperature. It's much more to do with cardiovascular impairment. And the fact that when you perform in the heat, you're now obligated to send much more blood to the skin.
And these are obviously athletes with the most efficient cardiovascular systems in the world. So that makes it all the more shocking. From the conversations you've had with these athletes, what have been some of the remarks maybe that have stood out to you from how they feel about their requirement to compete in ever more extreme conditions?
It ranges from concern through to fear. I mean, we've had, and if people go and have a look at the report that we've produced, you'll see some of the interviews with the elite athletes where they talk about actually the fear of dying. You know, the tennis guys, Djokovic was talking about people dying. People are talking about being able to fry eggs on court. I mean, historically, the climate really didn't feature very much in the preparation of an athlete. They tended to concentrate much more on their nutrition and on their training. But certainly now, probably the number one concern on their list would be the climate. And that's something that's changed pretty radically in the last 20 or 30 years.
We'd love to be able to solve climate change. We're probably some way off being able to do that. In lieu of that solution, what other actions can we take to make sure, you know, we maintain this greatest sporting spectacle on earth in the summertime, but keeping athletes safe at the same time?
Yeah, absolutely. The number one thing would be to mitigate the climate change, given that that's hopefully ongoing and very high on people's agenda. The next level you go to is the adaptation level. We can monitor the environments using WBGT, wet bulb globe temperature, which has a look at the radiant heat, the level of water vapor in the air, and the ambient temperature, measure the heat stress of the environment, and say, well, actually, this should be postponed, this should be cancelled. Physiologically, the best intervention is heat acclimatization. And within 7 to 10 days of about 90 minutes exposure a day, you can very significantly increase the circulating blood volume, which is essentially the coolant of the body. You can increase sweat production, decrease salt loss. People feel more comfortable. They can maintain lower skin temperatures, lower core temperatures.
Speaking of removing heat from the body, hold that thought just there, Mike. That was Mike Tipton, Professor of Human and Applied Physiology at the University of Portsmouth,